Welcome to a truncated download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty's in at 11. We'll get right to it with a couple of interviews of Chicagoans making a difference in international projects happening right here in the city. First, we're going to talk foster care tonight. What's working, what's not when it comes to taking care of the neediest children in Illinois. Tim McCormick will join me to talk about SOS Children's Villages and the need to rethink the way we do foster care to break up the poverty to homeless to incarceration pipeline. We'll talk more with Tim about that coming up here right after the carryout. Also tonight, a new play using satire to get at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We'll talk with an Israeli playwright about what the theater can do that politicians can't. That's coming up. That's a show that's up at Theater Wit. Also tonight, news, weather, and traffic. Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. And of course, Pete Zimmerman's here as well. We've only got an hour, so let's get right to it. It's not a lot of time, so we want to get everything in that we can before Patty takes over at 11. We have the carry out. That's right, our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Republican lawmakers say no to any new gun legislation after yesterday's mass shooting in California. This on the heels of lawmakers being shamed on Twitter after the incident. For instance, if they mentioned anything about the tragedy, other users listed their voting records and how much money they receive in campaign donations from the NRA, giving new meaning to the term instant message. The message? Do something. The way I see it, something has to give to either keep guns out of hands or to invest heavily in deflector shields, like the ones used in Star Trek or Star Wars. Punch it, Chewie! But to be fair, the party doesn't have time for gun control measures. New Speaker of the House Paul Ryan has laid out his plans for next year, and the number one priority? To get rid of Obamacare. That's it. I'm done. No. Forget it. That's it. I'm done recording. Ridiculous. Ugh. Okay, I'm back. Hey, State's Attorney Anita Alvarez blew her top today in a fun way. She used sarcasm to address the question that she covered up the evidence in charging the police officer for the killing of Laquan McDonald.
If Anita Alvarez wanted to whitewash a case, if Anita Alvarez was going to look the other way, if Anita Alvarez wasn't going to do her job and look at this case and do the review for excessive force, let me think. I'm going to conspire to whitewash this, to push it under the rug. Who are my co-conspirators going to be? Let me see. I'm going to call on the head of the FBI to help me. He could be a co-conspirator with me. Let me call on the United States Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois and say, Zach, come on, be a co-conspirator with me because I plan on covering this up. That is just absurd.
Hey, I'd pay $5 to see your full act, huh? Right? Or at least show up.
Another police shooting video looks like it might make its way to the public. And guess what? This one doesn't have audio either. It allegedly shows a police officer shooting Ronald Johnson as he fled down an alley. Police say he pointed a gun, but the video, well, it may show otherwise. The Trib is reporting that the city fought tooth and nail to keep this from being released in fear of public outcry. You know, I've heard of the news cycle repeating itself yearly, but like every week? Really? Gosh. Lollapalooza is celebrating its 25th anniversary next year by adding a fourth day. Lollapalooza, now with more people, more traffic, more Metro kids trying their first beer, more glow lights, more parents sleeping by the Buckingham Fountain, more road closures, more sweetheart deals with the city, more cleanup, more aging rock stars, and, oh yeah, more music. Coldplay was announced to perform during the Super Bowl. Man, I hope the Super Bowl isn't a blowout, because otherwise the billions that tune out, they're just not going to come back. Uber made changes today. They're going to implement a color-coded car system, so your phone and the car will have the same LED light or something like that. Because asking the driver their name is just, I don't know, it's just too much. Let me give you an example. Hey, are you Tom? Yeah. Are you Justin? Oh, that was so difficult. I can see why. All right, good. Also, traffic story of the year. Earlier, the Edens was blocked by a bunch of rolled-over cars who escaped from the weird car hauler. You know what I'm talking about? The ones that like the new car dealership has that huge semi with the cars on the back? It flipped or something and they rolled off. That's like nightmare scenario. Really? In weather, choice. In sports, Derrick Rose has been pretty awful from the field, but he's not blaming it on double vision. Instead, he's blaming it on open looks. He's too open. I will say this, refs don't like Derrick the way they have in the past. Maybe it's his plastic face. Did you see Steph Curry with the shot last night? 28 points in the third quarter alone. In the blowout win in Charlotte, He had 40 points, and he didn't play at all in the fourth quarter. Golden State 20-0. In football, the Bears put Marquise Wilson on the injury report. He got hurt in practice. Classic. More on Fangio getting passed up for the 49er coach. Also, so did offensive coordinator Adam Gase. Probably John Fox, too. So seriously, if this isn't enough bulletin board material, if you lose to the 49ers, it's on you, man. And next week's a deadline on Kevin White, the rookie wideout who's practicing if the Bears deem necessary. The first-round pick could play against Minnesota. Yee. And is Martellus Bennett miffed with the Bears? I don't know if he's miffed, but doesn't he look miffed when he plays? Is miffed the same meaning as the word lethargic? You ever watch Martellus Bennett get up after he misses a pass? Oh, man. Let me walk back to the huddle as slow as I possibly can. I'm so dejected. And baseball, still no big moves for the Cubs or Sox, but Samardzija's telling teams he has a $100 million offer on the table. If I were his agent, take it, take it, take it. And I hope it's not one of our teams. Well, and finally tonight, hoverboards. Are they killing you? A new study says that the popular toy slash vehicle could be dangerous when they overheat, possibly exploding while you are riding. When approached for comment, the skateboard said, kids these days. That's the carryout for December 3rd, 2015. Hey, did you have the breast, the thigh, and the wing? You know, it doesn't matter. It's all fake. More to come in this shortened version of the show tonight. We're going to talk about families, and we're going to talk about foster care, and we're going to talk about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Now, that's a night. That's a night altogether. It's a download here on WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tonight, let's talk foster care. In Illinois, the last few years have been bumpy at the top. DCFS has changed leadership a few times, and now the state of Illinois budget issues threaten to take funding away from all involved in child care and foster care services. But one group is not only weathering the storm, but continues to change the way foster care is done at its core. I'm talking about SOS Children's Villages, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary in Illinois. Tim McCormick is the CEO of SOS Children's Villages Illinois, and he's here with me now. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Justin. Thank you so much, and very happy to be with you and your listeners tonight.
It's great to talk about this because this is an area that I've always been curious about. When we talk foster care, let's lay out the landscape first, you know, because when I think of foster care, I think of group homes or the idea of, and you know, not to be naive about it, but kind of like Annie, mm-hmm. where there's one group, you know, adult and kids that live in a house. So tell us about the landscape of how foster care works in the state of Illinois.
So there's basically, I think, three fundamental types of model. There's an individual home where many of your listeners would be foster parents, I'm assuming, and will open their doors and take in a child or a couple of children into their homes. And that's a traditional model of foster care. Sadly, there is another model, which has been the group living model and residential, which has caught a lot of attention and really hasn't proven and served children well throughout the United States.
That's the one when I reference a bumpy at the top. There's just always a lot of investigation and look into the group homes.
Yeah, because in that model, brothers and sisters are separated and they're divided by age and gender and live in group homes. And sadly, in the United States, there's over 400,000 children in foster care. And across the nation, 75% of those brothers and sisters will get separated when they enter into the foster care system, and oftentimes many barriers that they don't even see each other for months.
And the third option is what you guys do.
Third option is what SOS Children's Village has, and there's really four key pillars to our model that actually began, as you know, after the Second World War, when brothers and sisters were systematically being separated as orphans throughout Europe. And the four pillars are, one, keeping brothers and sisters together, and that's a real core element of what we do. And the second is, it is an individual home. So we will build and create homes in a community-like setting, a village, integrate it with a greater community so that children can stay together and begin to thrive. And then really the secret sauce of our whole model is this full-time professional foster parent, an individual who will uproot their life like a Peace Corps-type model, come and live in this village, provide unconditional love.
That's their job, yeah.
And that is their job, to help transform the child's life and really transform their lives and ultimately our community.
You know, it's interesting because you do mention the idea in the group home setting that it really is a pipeline where you see poverty, then maybe you see homelessness, then you see incarceration. You see this with a lot of foster kids. You see this this continuing cycle. And this is sort of difficult to break. Talk about how, in your estimation, how SOS Children's Villages tries to do that, because that is seems to be exactly what is at the core of what's fundamentally broken about foster care.
I think you got your finger right on the pulse, is that the more we can invest at the beginning of this story, the more different results we see at the end. And sadly, we tend to commodify many things in this country, and it is perhaps a much cheaper model to separate brothers and sisters, keep them separated from each other in larger group homes than to provide what we're able to provide. Our model really is a midpoint between the cost of a group home and an individual home. In our model, when we keep siblings together with a professionally trained foster parents whose only job is to be with that child, we have dramatically different results. For example, sadly, in the United States, 50% of kids in foster care will never graduate high school. For the last 9 years here at SOS,
50%?
50%.
Wow.
We've had 100% high school graduation, right? Because we set the standard from the very beginning. It's not will you, but when will you? And we make that happen. Even sadder, only 3% of children in foster care ever graduate college. And many times that's because of the multiple movements they've had that's disrupted their education. At SOS Children's Villages, we provide a stability for emotional, physical, and educational support to get those types of results.
Why is that not happening at the state level when it comes to DCFS or the group homes, the stuff that's sponsored? Why is there not more emphasis on education and making sure that these kids graduate high school?
Well, I think the current director is really beginning to direct it in that sense, George Sheldon, and has made a significant turn in that way. But I think for the most part, like many things, it's economics. And we rely on state funding, but we also rely on like people like your listeners to support us to make that difference. And so we're able to marshal community resources that will provide tutoring and mentoring, and we'll get that extra laptop and provide the extra support that children will need to make that difference. We did last year, 90% of our children attended over 90% of the classes in the school systems from kindergarten through high school. And prior to coming into our care, if they were going to 60% of school, that was a lot.
And a lot of your money, though, does come from DCFS, a big portion of it. And obviously DCFS, Department of Children and Family Services, is affected by the budget situation in Springfield, the fact that there is no budget. But let me ask you about that. How does that affect, you know, because we hear all the time about, well, this is doomsday for a lot of social service agencies and businesses. What's the effect of not having a budget in place in the state of Illinois?
Well, there's really two levels that impact us and affect us. One is, like every social service agency in the state, we're walking on eggshells, and we're feeling them starting to shake. The one difference, I would say, within child welfare agencies is there are certain consent decrees that mandate, federal mandates and federal funds that mandate
the
disbursements.
So you got to fund this, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's the one thing we do to keep our moral conscience clean that children aren't sleeping in the streets aren't sleeping in the streets here in Illinois.
But do you run the risk, I mean, for what you're talking about and for the improvements you want to break that pipeline, to break that poverty, homelessness, incarceration pipeline, it's not just about having the bare bottom necessity funding so you can put clothes on foster children and feed them. It has much more to do with the resources that are above and beyond that.
You're exactly right that the fundamental, the essentials are basic, and that's what the contract
provides
for.
And that's what the state
gives
you. Yeah, yeah.
It's really the ability to reach out and to find the community resources. And here's what I think is important, Justin, that we have seen over, and I've been at the agency and the organization for over 11 years, that when we provide those needed resources to a child, many different things happen. Case in point, there was a young girl who came into our care, and she had been in foster care all of her life. And she finally gets adopted, and then her adopted mother dies, and she comes back into our care. And she was devastated. She was in eighth grade at the time. She graduated high school last May. She was an honor roll student. She served on one of the statewide committee. She had 9 scholarships, including a partial scholarship to Yale, and is now at the University of Southern Cal with a full scholarship. And my point is, when we as a society do this job right and invest in our children, we see very different results than we're seeing oftentimes in the streets of our city.
So what's it going to take for foster care services, the DCFS for others, to look at what you're doing, the model, and be able to adapt some of that stuff so we can see some results.
I think three things, Justin, and one, you've done it for us tonight. Most people don't hear about foster care agency unless something horrific has happened. Mm-hmm. And getting out there telling that there really is hope in this season to invest, and I'm very appreciative of you to allow that. Two, I think a greater awareness to provide that support, both from the policymakers to individuals, to say we can find agencies like us and others. We're very proud that our agency has been named one of the top 20 charities by Chicago Magazine. Yeah. And has consistently received a 4-star rating with Charity Navigator, a national rating, to say they're using their funds right. And I think people should look at those types of opportunities. And third, I think we have to continue to adapt to the changing environment. The complexities of children in our care need more support. And when we do that early on, we stop some of the things that oftentimes hit the headlines here in Chicago.
This is all about starting early.
Yeah.
Yep. Tim McCormick is the CEO of SOS Children's Villages Illinois. Join me tonight. Thanks, Tim, for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
For more information, you can go to sosillinois.org. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm excited to have in studio with me Mikhail Haharoni. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Close enough?
Not too bad.
Not too She is the playwright of the new play Angina Pectoris, which is being performed at Theater Wit at 1229 West Belmont. It's part of the Spiel Performing Identity, I guess, theater company?
Yeah,
David
it's a theater
Jack
project.
Is here. Yeah, right. David Jack's here, director of the show. Good to see you.
Great to be here.
So let's talk about the show, because this is a satire really of Palestinian-Israeli relations. Tell us a little bit about the play.
Well, it tells the story of the minister, of the defense minister, who needs a heart transplant. And in Israel, they issued a bill that if you're Jewish, you're not allowed to get a non-Jewish organ from a non-Jewish people. And now he collapsed and he needs a heart transplant. And the only heart available is a Palestinian heart. And he should make a decision. And it's about his decision and how he's about to get this decision.
Well, it's obviously about that decision, but it's also about everything else that's happening in the Middle East in terms of humanity and the way that two people live side by side and live together. David, why produce this play? Why bring this to Chicago?
Well, I think, number one, there's incredible Israeli theater, and Americans don't know about that. A lot of it is natural because it's not translated well. Michal has just engaged an incredible interpreter-translator who's from America who just put it within an American idiom, and it is so funny. And it goes beyond the political-ness of it. It makes it into a human story, but also just an outrageous story. And if we can just look at the outrageousness of everything, then we start to see not only the humor, but the humanity of it. So we go from humor to humanity. And I saw this is perfect for Spiel. It has to do with identity, has to do with culture, but it also has to do with moving beyond the way we normally look at things and to see them as we need to see them because we want to get to some kind of understanding.
Well, humor.
Wow, it sounds like a very good play.
Yes. And I want to meet the playwright someday.
Someday.
That's right.
She's over
right
the here. Rainbow, yeah.
But humor is obviously a tool that's in your toolbox when it comes to writing plays, Mikhail. How do you think American audiences will react to the humor about something they don't know that much about, the relationship between Israeli and Palestinians? Is something that we hear in a national and international story, and we kind of have an understanding of it, but we're not on the ground. We don't understand it. Do you think that humor is the right way for someone in Chicago living to understand this relationship?
Well, at the end of the day, I think that humor is the only way to confront the thing that happened in the Middle East. I mean, it's a tragedy. At the end of the day, it's a tragedy. But, I mean, we heard so much about it. And we read so much about it. And the American audience, I mean, American people, they're pretty much involved in what happened in the Middle East. And there is a huge community, a Jewish community. And they stand for Israel, or they sit for Israel. They do so many things for Israel. And they identify themselves. And in a way, they treat Israel and the way they think about Israel. And I think that, you know, let's try humor. We didn't try humor yet. So maybe there's another way to, you know, to deal with this whole thing.
David, what do you think about the way that audiences will react to this story told through satire, through humor?
I think they'll be really surprised. They're going to see something which, in fact, is quite close to them in terms of its humanity, in terms of its being funny. And it's also going to be about multiculturalism. One of the great things about this play also is it shows so many different kinds of Israelis. Many of us just think Israel, the Jewish state. Guess what? There are Ethiopians there. There are Indians there. There's Druze there. There's Christians. There's Muslims. There's people wearing all different kinds of dress. They look so part of the global experience. And the question I think that Michal raises, which in some ways also goes beyond politics, is who is an Israeli today?
Right.
Israel needs to confront the fact that its identity is also changing. And it's part of what the global situation is all about. What is our identity today?
Do you feel like that story is being told? I mean, I think about that ideal, the idea that identity is changing in Israel, is one that I'm unfamiliar with. The biggest thing I know is that it is Jewish, and I know that the Palestinian is Muslim, and they have been fighting for years. Like, that's how I just break it down. But when you talk about culture and identity, it is changing. Is Israel okay with that?
I'm not sure it's okay with it. But it is changing, and it's sometimes I meet people, Israelis who have been here for like 20 or 25 years, and they talk about Israel, and I keep asking them, are you talking about Israel? Because I'm not familiar with the Israel that you're talking about. It has been changed completely. I mean, 20% of the population are Russian immigrants. Some of them are non-Jewish people. 20% of the population are ultra-Orthodox people. I mean, it makes something. It does something. And it has changed the country completely. And I think that in the States, some people, it's not only the Israelis who have to confront it. It's also the American Jews who sometimes look at Israel and they see one thing and they don't understand it. It's a completely different thing.
David, you raised your hand.
Well, I was just thinking in the last election, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michal, she keeps up with the politics more than I do, but the last election, one of the largest blocs that won seats in the Knesset were Arabs, the Arab Israelis. And the Arab Israelis are now not only mobilizing, but really showing that they are citizens of Israel. And that's one of the things that's in the play. Michal wrote this character who plays multiple parts, and he plays all these different kinds of Israelis, and they're not all from Jewish backgrounds. And at the very end of the day, he has this incredible, very moving speech about what it means to be who he is. And he's this multiple kind of Israeli now. And she has one person playing him, which I think is brilliant because it has that symbolism of we are all multiple people from cultures, from ethnicities, from religions, and we all have got to live together. So we better learn how to do it.
Keep talking about my play. No, really. It sounds so... Well, I wasn't sure that you're talking about my play, but...
Right.
You'll take it.
Well, I'm talking about the play that I know
everybody's
going to want to see this play. This is so funny and casts this whole situation in an entirely different light.
David Chack and also Michal Aharoni. I'm close? No, I don't
you,
do
you,
well.
You did it much
very
better
good.
Now.
That
I
was
mean,
very
give it, yeah,
good.
Give it like
converting.
Five, six
He's
times.
He's becoming Israeli, yeah. I can hear.
That's right. And Gina Pictoris is the play, Spiel Performing Identity, a theater company is presenting it, the Theater Wit, on 1229 West Belmont. It's now until January 3rd. You know, we've heard a lot about Middle Eastern politics, obviously what happened in Paris, and now the political shift, when everyone's talking about refugees and Syrian refugees and who's going to take the refugees, who's not, it's almost put the Israeli-Palestinian conflict on the back burner. It's become the second, it's the first time in modern history. What is your take as a journalist?
We are a neglected conflict. This is what we are now.
As a journalist, as a playwright, when you think about the conflict that, has just been at front and center for so many years, and you compare it to what's happening with Syria, what's your take on it? What's Israeli
take on it? You can't compare. At the end, I mean, you can't compare because it's not the same thing. I mean, in Syria, there are millions of refugees, and Assad just, murdered people. It's not the same conflict, and it's not on the same issue. I mean, I respect our conflict deeply, but But it's, I mean, what happened in Syria now, it's a tragedy. It's not a conflict anymore. It becomes a tragedy. And with the Israeli and the Palestinians, it's not a tragedy yet. But it might become a tragedy. I wouldn't like to compare between the two.
Well, I mean, geographically, Syria is really close to Israel. I mean, that's right. So for you,
quite close. Yeah, quite close. Everything is close.
Everything is close.
Everything is close to
home.
Israel.
But, you know, for you, you know, and for the Israelis, I mean, is it top of mind? Is what's happening in Syria top of mind, or is it kind of like, you know, every other European country?
You
where
you must remember that a few years ago we negotiated the Golan Heights. And people actually were talking about, you know, about giving the Golan Heights back to Syria for peace agreement. And now you can see that, well, it didn't happen. And thanks God it didn't happen, because we thought that, you know, that Assad will be there forever, the father. And apparently he didn't. So, yes, of course it bothers us because, and you know, that there are a lot of Israelis and there is a hospital on the border. And Syrian refugees, they actually come to Israel to get some treatment on the border. So, yes, it's there. It's always there. It's always there. But the tragedy of Israel is that, you know, if that will end, then we have Lebanon. And if Lebanon will end, then we will have the Palestinians forever there. I mean, we're in a conflict.
That's a good word for it.
That's why we're so rude, we need to deal with this whole thing.
I'm fascinated because the news we get. I mean, you can see now, you know, with the internet age, you can seek out any source that you'd like. But the mainstream news that you're used to, even the local papers being able to tell, it's an Associated Press kind of the nuts and bolts story about what's happening, especially when it comes to Israeli-Palestinian conflict. For me, what I want to know is, you know, we haven't heard as much about it, like you just said, that, you know, it's kind of on the back burner. It's there's a different conflict happening. What do we need to know about it? I mean, is it stifled? Are people getting along, or is it just a powder keg waiting to happen again?
I think that it's not about what we need to know. It's what we want to know, because in many ways, people don't want to know. They feel comfortable with black and white. They feel comfortable with, you know, right and left. They feel very comfortable when you tell a short story. You know, it's the conflict is not a tweet. It's not 140 Twitter something. It's just it's more complicated.
Yeah.
It depends on the situation, on the specific moment.
You're an Israeli playwright. Is the theater community there a community that pushes back on the stories, that gives different perspectives? Is it an audience that wants to hear different stories?
That's a great question.
Israel is a very political place. Let's start. I mean, we listen to the news all the time. I don't know how many Americans know the names of like 20 senators. We know the names of all our 120 members of the Knesset, and we hate 130 of them. And so basically, the community, the theater community in Israel is pretty much involved in everything. And it has to do a lot with the fact that, as usual and as in everywhere, the community is a left-wing community. As you know,
as it is here too, yeah.
Quite, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say anything that, you know, people will say, wow. And people are involved because they have a lot of connections with, you know, with Palestinians and with Arabs. And there is a theater in Haifa and there is a theater in Beersheba, which are, you know, which are cities with Arabs and Jews who live together. So, yeah, we do. I mean, during the last few years, it becomes harder and harder because of the situation, because of the political situation. But still, they're pretty much involved. And I love the Israeli theater community. They're so angry all the time. Yeah.
And they're involved, though. I mean, many Israelis go to theater, seek out theater, love theater. They're members of theaters. At least 30% of the Israeli population, Israeli Jewish population, are members of theaters and go regularly to theater. This is a major part of their cultural diet.
Well, you can get a little bit of that with Angina Pictoris, which will be at the world premiere at Theater Wit, 1229 West Belmont, written by Michal Aharoni.
All the time. It's getting better. I mean... Keep saying that.
I'm going to work on it. I'm going to go get in front of the mirror and work on it.
I'm sorry for bringing the ha.
Just keep saying Hanukkah, then you'll get it.
David Shack, the director, also the man behind Spiel, a performing identity, which is a theater company here. The show is from now until January 3rd. You can look it up. It's at Theater Wit. Thank you both for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
The download here, I'm Justin Coffin with Pete Zimmerman. I was working on it. I gotta get the huh, Mihal. I'll get it. While we're in the middle of that interview, did you see the Hail Mary victory for the Green Bay Packers against the Detroit Lions? The Lions pretty much owned the game, and they had the lead by two with seconds remaining. The Packers did a wild kind of flea flicker play with no time on the clock. And Aaron Rodgers got the ball back, which was strange anyway. You throw it back to your quarterback like he's going to run Cal Stanford style for 80 yards. And as he was going down, he was phantom face masked.
Yeah.
Which will be one of those things in the NFL where like, because Rodgers did a good acting job of his head getting jerked around. And they gave him another play, 15 yards, and he threw a Hail Mary touchdown caught by Rodgers to Rodgers, which is not the CBS show, Rodgers to Rodgers. Doesn't it feel like that would be a good name for like a Tuesday drama?
That would be, yeah.
Rodgers and Rodgers, two Texas detectives. Yeah, Richard Rodgers, is that who that is? Yeah. Anyway, at 162 yards passing because he caught 70 of them on the last. And so, yeah, the Packers win. They go to 8-4. The Lions go to 4-8. As I just saw, the best tweet that summed it all up, God hates Detroit. Just no luck, man.
Anyway, well, it doesn't help the Bears either. That would have been nice to have the Packers. Yeah, I saw that somebody said that the Packers led for zero minutes and 0 seconds in that game and still won.
Yeah, because it was no time on the clock.
Yeah, no time on the clock.
Gosh, come on. Yeah, it does hurt the Bears because a 7-5 Packers team with two losses, there would be two losses in the three losses because they would have been swept by the Lions. Would be if the tiebreaker came down to it, the Bears would have a good shot at the end of the year having a tiebreaker with the Packers to get into the playoffs. But now with one game difference, the Bears sitting 5-6, the Packers at 8-4, that's pretty tough to overcome. Doesn't necessarily mean the Bears can't win in the second one because I believe it's Atlanta or Seattle. Seattle right now is 6-5, and they're in the possession of the second wild card. So,
I mean, the Bears will win out. Bears are going to be 10-6.
Yeah, that's what you got? You're going for that? That's your thought?
Mm-hmm.
You're
going to
beat the Vikings in that.
That's all right. I don't think the Vikings are okay, but I think that the Bears could beat the Vikings.
Yeah. Pernell McPhee, who's steadily becoming my favorite Bear of all time.
Nanny McPhee, you mean?
Nanny McPhee.
Mm-hmm.
Nanny
You're not
McPhee.
Even using your own nickname.
He's got to come in like, did somebody order Nanny? He's got a big wart on his nose. Did anybody Nanny? I think he said it. He's like, hey, he said in the media this week, he said, Chicagoans, reserve the second week in January. And he had a great quote that was something like, you're going to love the playoffs, trust me. Or something like that. Like, he essentially guaranteed that the Bears were going to the playoffs. And hey, I do not go against Pernell Nanny McPhee, right? The nanny says go to bed.
No, you can't. Mm-hmm.
You go to bed. Nanny says go to the playoffs. You go to the playoffs. Who am I, Pete? Who am I?
You're right.
Patty Vasquez is coming up next here. She's got Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. So we will get to that in just a moment. Tomorrow night we are back, and I am so excited to say Jeff Pizzotti will be here from Naked Ray Gun.
Awesome.
Doing the big table, which is pretty cool. And also Sam Adam Jr. will join us to talk about the fervor over Anita Alvarez, who was hilarious today when she got all mad, hitting the mic. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
She was hitting the mic every time she slammed her hand up. Oh, yeah. Anita Alvarez just said, oh, yeah. Oh, she got real Chicago. Oh, yeah. That sounds exactly how I was supposed to do it.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Somebody had to tap her and say, like, move back a
little
bit.
There was one hand that came in like, that's enough, state's attorney. Oh, don't tell me. Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, who am I? Who am I going to try? I wonder who I'll get. I guess I'll get the FBI involved. That's what I'll do with my cover-up. That's what Anita Alvarez says. Doink, doink, ching, doink, ching. It's so good. We should have done this. Anyone out there should do what, like, the, remember when Kanye had the on the MTV Music Awards and they had that big speech? Somebody put a laugh track and the Seinfeld music in underneath it. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, they should do that to that Anita. We should do that tomorrow. We should do the Anita Alvarez speech with Seinfeld laugh track and boom, 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 boom. Because she's like, oh, yeah, Anita Alvarez does that. Anita Alvarez does that.